No risk it, no biscuit.
Welcome to the Revenge of the Birds, our Arizona Cardinals fan podcast through SB Nation. I'm your host, Jess Root, and on the line, my co-host, Seth Cox. How are you doing tonight, Seth?
Good, Jess. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing great. After a little bit of trouble with getting on for the first time, we are holding our very first episode of our podcast here. And, well, we've got training camp coming up here in the next couple of weeks. And so before we actually do our training camp preview, we wanted to talk about a couple of things while we get started. As a little bit of background, for those of you who aren't familiar with the site, Revenge of the Birds, we're through SB Nation. Revenge of the Birds is our Arizona Cardinals team site. It is an unofficial site, and I am Jess Rubin, one of the writers, the editor of the site. Seth Cox is fairly new to the site. Seth, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm just, much like everybody else on the site, I'm a Cardinals fan first, and just enjoy writing about the game of football. I talk a lot about the NFL draft and college prospects, so just love the game of football. So just wanted to be able to share my thoughts on the Cardinals with all the Cardinals fans out there.
Well, great. Well, today on the show, what we've got, we want to talk about a little bit of the off season. We're going to talk about the move that for the Cardinals made from taking training camp from Flagstaff down to Glendale down here in the Valley. Then we're going to talk about some defensive teams, something that Seth is a bit familiar with. He's been writing about in a few of his posts in the last couple of weeks. So, talking about the Arizona Cardinals in this offseason, obviously, is a good kind of a rundown. We've got Bruce Arians is hired as the new head coach. Steve Keim, the new general manager, promoted from within the organization. The offensive staff, gone, except for Freddie Kitchens. A new defensive staff that Bruce Arians brought in with defensive coordinator Todd Bowles. Then some key figures from last year, no longer with the team. Kevin Cobb, gone. John Skelton, gone. Brian Hoyer was retained initially and then gone. Beanie Wells, gone. Stuart Bradley, he should have been a key player but was not. He is also gone. Adrian Wilson, Kerry Rhodes, gone. Paris Lennon, not brought back. Larod Stevens Howling, not returned. So we've got a lot of turnover. We had the draft happen with the first pick. They took Jonathan Cooper, guard, taken in the top 10, not something that hasn't happened since the 90s. They brought in Kevin Minter out of LSU, Tyrann Mathieu. They drafted Earl Watford. They drafted Stephon Taylor, Andre Ellington. They brought in, trying to go down, Ryan Swope. They brought in, who are the other two guys? I'm drawing a blank.
DC Jefferson and Alex Okafor.
That's right, Alex Okafor out of Texas, and then D.C. Jefferson in the seventh round, and then some of the free agent signings, mostly some one-year deals. Now, they brought back Rashad Johnson, who has now steps into a starting role after slowly developing, playing some key defense there in the secondary. Bring in Jerrod Powers on defense at cornerback, Antoine Kaysen. They bring in Carlos Dansby. They bring in Jasper Brinkley, Lorenzo Alexander, and then Rashard Mendenhall and Jeremiah Bell, to name a few. So let's talk about this so far, Seth. With the off season that has gone so far, what have you liked the best?
I think for me personally, the thing I like the best is the turnover on of youth. I like getting this team younger right off the bat. I mean, Adrian Wilson is a Cardinal through and through. He's, you know, he's one of those guys that you would have liked to have seen retired a Cardinal. But at this stage with what, you know, a new staff, a new defensive staff, pretty much, you know, trying to get younger on the defensive side of the ball, you know, letting Wilson go and letting him go somewhere and, you know, see if he can win a ring, and that's what he's going to do in New England. You know, that's what you want to see. But mostly I like the fact that they got younger. I mean, you look at the defensive line outside of Darnell Dockett, they're young. You look at their linebackers, they're all young. You look at their secondary, they're all young outside of Jeremiah Bell. I mean, that defense that was really, really good last year, you know, they lost a lot of key pieces, and I understand that, and that makes me nervous for next year. But I like the fact that they got younger and they got faster, and now we can, you know, now it's up to Todd Bowles to see if he's as inventive and as good of a defensive coordinator as Ray Horton.
What I liked best, it actually, when it came to the moves that they made in free agency, it wasn't necessarily a player I liked best. It was their approach. Yes, they got Jasper Brinkley, Jerrod Powers, Lorenzo Alexander, all on multi-year deals. However, what I loved was the fact that they went after so many veteran players on one-year contracts, basically saying, come prove it. Now, it was kind of the trend of the NFL this year. The veterans were kind of getting left off to the side to start with. But I love the fact that they're not on the hook for multi-year deals on these guys. And the plan is, okay, we're going to bring in guy now to fill in. If they do well, we might keep him, or we're going to develop a guy behind him. And if I had to pick on one signing that I was really pleased about, it was Carlos Dansby. Now, that came later, naturally. Carlos Dansby will step in and I think will do wonderfully well, at least to start the year in place of Darrell Washington, who obviously is going to be suspended for the first four games. Seth, your take. What do you think about the hiring of Bruce Arians? Who did you want to see signed? Did you want to see Horton get promoted? Did you want to see someone else brought in? What's your take on how that went down?
We have to go back and remember that before Arians was signed, they still had Cobb on the roster. So my thought process was bring in a guy that can play to Cobb's strength for 1 year. Cobb was the epitome of average at best. He never really got a chance to play in an offense that suited to his skill set, quick passing game, West Coast style offense. So I wanted to see them bring in a guy that could give that 1 year chance for Cobb to see if he could do anything. I mean, you're already going to pay him a ton of money, so why not bring in a guy like Darrell Bevell? That was actually my first choice, and see what he could do. You know, when they went with Arians, I raised my eyebrows a little bit simply because he's 60 years old. It's his first coaching gig as a head coach, and he has a similar offensive philosophy to Wisenhunt, which we have seen didn't work with the personnel they had. Now, having said all that, they've gone through this overhaul on offense, and so you can say now that with getting Carson Palmer and bringing in Bruce Arians, they've actually got a quarterback that fits the system that the head coach wants to run. So, you know, my only hesitation with Arians is really the age. And 60 is not old in NFL terms, but for a first-time head coach, it makes you scratch your head a little bit. But I love his enthusiasm. I love his passion for the game and how much he loves the game. So I look forward to seeing what he can do. But you know, and I'm behind him now. It wasn't my first choice. It wasn't really my second choice. But I think with the way they've turned over the roster to get Arians guys in place, I'm much happier with it now.
I didn't consider, because Bruce Arians never was on the radar, at least to start with, at least public, we did not know that he was on the radar. It was a shock to me when it happened. And I was honestly surprised after what he did last year that he wasn't getting more attention. Initially, I liked the idea of having Ray Horton promoted just because of that whole continuity to maintain the defensive philosophy that he had. And then this is a man, Ray Horton, who is very confident and by all accounts was going to be able to assemble an offensive staff that included Norv Turner. That I kind of liked that idea. However, when I sat down and thought about it, here you look at the front office was clearly looking for somebody offensively minded, someone who could turn things around quickly, who could develop players, particularly quarterback. And looking at the candidates out there, you really, aside from the experience that he didn't have as a head coach until last year when he stepped in for Chuck Pagano, I didn't think there was anyone else that was more qualified. He's worked with young quarterbacks. He's an offensive-minded coach who wants to score points. He wants to push the football down the field. He had head coaching experience thanks to last year, and how often do you get to hire the coach of the year? That doesn't generally happen. So I really liked that hire. Tell me about your take on going from Ray Horton to Todd Bowles. There's a lot of concern among Cardinals fans on how that defense is going to look. Do you see a step back? Do you see Todd Bowles as being something less than what Ray Horton was a year ago or what he is now?
Well, no matter what Bowles does in year one, I think we need to take everything kind of with a grain of salt. You have to remember he's going to implement his scheme and his philosophy into the Cardinals defense. And so that's going to take some time. They're going to be without one of their top three defensive players in Darrell Washington for at least four games. I mean, remember, we still have the alleged domestic violence incident that we're waiting to figure out everything on. And with Goodell at the helm, who knows if he could end up getting suspended more games. But, you know, I think a lot of fans have this, I think fans are split. I think a lot of fans look at what the defense was last year and they say, oh, we'll be fine. We don't have to worry about it. But they forget that it's a new coach and it's a different philosophy. He's not going to run Ray Horton's philosophy because nobody runs Ray Horton's philosophy. Even the great Dick LeBeau, who Ray Horton learned under, Horton ran his own variation of LeBeau's, you know, blitzing 3-4 attacking defense. And that's not what Bowles is going to do. So it's going to take some time. I think they're going to take a step back just off of that. It's going to, you know, take some time for them to get acclimated to what Bowles wants, to the philosophy, to how he wants them to play the game. I mean, you look at Horton's first couple of years, they weren't great. They started to build towards great, but they weren't great. And I think we could see a similar type of maybe step back. Maybe they go from a top 10 defense to a top 15, maybe a little lower. But I think between the changeover with Bowles and the suspension of Darrell Washington, I think there's going to be a little bit of struggle at the beginning of the year at least. If they get Darrell Washington back after four games, I think about game 5, 6, maybe even 7, you could see the defense start to get back into a rhythm. But I think early on, especially the first 4 weeks, you could see a lot of points being scored against them.
Now, what will you think? What is the move you've liked the least this offseason?
I've gone back and forth on this, and I'm of the opinion that Carson Palmer is a good NFL quarterback, and that's about his limitation. I know a lot of people are going to hate that and say, oh, look what he did in Oakland last year on a pathetic team, you know, and throw his statistics at me and his touchdowns and interceptions and things like that. But, you know, I think that he is good enough to get this team to mediocrity. And that, in the NFL sense, is the worst place you can be. Being 7, 8, 9 wins every season is not something you want to be in the NFL, because then you're missing out on the chance to get franchise quarterbacks, and then you're hoping that you can get one to fall to you in the teens or the 20s, and you know, we've seen how that worked lately. You know, for every Colin Kaepernick, there is, you know, there's going to be a Drew Stanton who was picked around the same time Colin Kaepernick was. So you just have to be careful with that. And that's not to say I don't like the Palmer signing. It is an immediate upgrade from what they had the last 3 years post-Warner, and it is probably the best fit on the market that of quarterbacks available that they could have gotten that fits into Arian's scheme. So I don't want it to seem like I don't like the move, but I'm afraid that the move may lead to immediate satisfaction of, hey, you know, the Cardinals went from 6 wins this year, you know, last year, and now they are 5 wins, whatever it was, excuse me, you know, to 7 wins. Look, there's an improvement. They're on the upswing, but then they could stagnate. And, you know, being stagnant in the NFL, we've seen that way too often here in the desert, is probably the worst thing you can be. Again, I don't want to say it's my least favorite, because it's not my least favorite. I would probably say Rashard Mendenhall is my least favorite. But in general, I don't like the idea of being mediocre at the most important position on the field.
So you don't like the Mendenhall deal on 1 year. Even though it's only a 1 year deal, you'd prefer that they stuck with, say, go with Ryan Williams, and then going writing Stephon Taylor and Andre. Granted, they didn't have them. They didn't know they were going to be drafting them at that time.
Yeah, I would have preferred a rookie or and with Ryan Williams and let the chips fall where they may at that point. I have no problem with Mendenhall on a 1 year deal, but I have a problem with the fact that I really don't see any way that he comes back next year, because if he blows up, then they're going to have to give him a 5 year, $40 million deal. And you don't spend that on a running back. We've just seen that recently, unless their name is, you know, Adrian Peterson, you just can't do that. And then if he's not wanted back next year, it's because he was not good. I don't really see any middle ground there. So that's kind of where I'm at on, you know, it's another stopgap at an important position in Arian's offense. So I felt like, you know, and obviously hindsight's 2020 with Taylor and Ellington being drafted, but I felt like there were other options that they could have gone to instead. But, yeah, Mendenhall would probably be my least favorite right off the bat.
For me, the offseason moves, by nature, I'm really positive on everything. I love the Cardinals and I love everything they do, so it's hard for me to say, oh, I don't like that move, until after it stinks. I loved the Kevin Cobb trade. I loved when... I didn't like the Derek Anderson. I never understood that when it happened. This offseason, the one signing that kind of made me scratch my head was Jerod Powers, when they had a guy like in Greg Toler, because basically you went from Greg Toler, who's shown flashes of being pretty good, but injury issues, and they went to Jerod Powers, who has injury issues. Only the difference is, I think Toler's upside is more than Powers. And granted, they did get him for cheaper than they would have gotten Toler, a little bit cheaper. And I guess there's some familiarity there with Arians. But if I had to pick one signing that I didn't like, it was Powers I liked the least.
And I couldn't see that completely. I mean, I kind of feel similarly with Jasper Brinkley. He brought in a guy that's not really suited to anything more than a two-down run-stopping linebacker, and then he went and drafted one, and then he went and signed another one, and kind of like, okay, there's a lot of redundancy going on here. But, yeah, I get where you're coming from with Powers. I think Toler's ceiling is higher, but I wonder if there are concerns about lingering knee issues with him, and maybe that's, you know, the Cardinals, and they're having seen all of his physicals and things like that, maybe, and this is just complete speculation, but maybe that might have weighed in, because it wasn't the cost difference wasn't much. I think it was $4 million or something like that, and you know, that's you and I throwing around $4 million, but
yeah, pocket change in the NFL, big deal for us.
Yeah.
Hey, let's move to the next topic. Talking about training camp is coming here in a couple of weeks. Is our first practice that we're going to be able to see is going to be on July the 26th. The rookies report the 23rd. The veterans report on the 25th. and we at Revenge of the Birds, we will be at some of those practices. So that will be great. We'll be covering that there. However, the move this year, for the first time since coming to the Valley, it will not be held up north. And the team is now holding it in Glendale in the Valley for a number of reasons. Flagstaff is a place where people have loved to go. It's well received. There are some issues, though, with the facilities, with the amount of rent that the Cardinals were paying. There were definitely some issues that came up when they were trying to come up with a new agreement. What NAU was wanting to do, there was some talk they want to charge for parking. There were some limitations that they were giving on signage, and then just the quality of the facilities. And so they move it here. Good move, bad move, indifferent for you, Seth?
You know, selfishly, I'll say good move, just because now, you know, I'll have a chance to go out. It's easier to make a day trip out to Glendale than it is to Flagstaff. You know, if I want to go see the Friday night, you know, live, you know, 7-on-7, I can go do that without any problems. Where, you know, if it's up in Flagstaff, you got to leave work early and you got to, you know, make sure you get out there before traffic. And then, you know, you probably want to spend the night because you don't want to drive home with everybody else. So selfishly, I'll say good. From a standpoint of training, you know, I liked the guys having to go up into the elevation, run in the thin air. I thought that was good. You know, I didn't play football in college or anything like that, but even in high school when we went up north, you could feel the difference in what you were doing. And so I think from a standpoint of training, I like it better in Flagstaff. But you know, overall, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I know a lot of fans are upset because they, you know, take days off and go up there and stay for a couple days at a time, and it's much cooler, obviously. But I think overall, you're not going to see much of a difference. Hopefully not. I mean, Lord knows the product can't get much worse than it was last year. So hopefully.
Certainly not. As much as Flagstaff, I've been up the past 3 years, at least for portions. It really is kind of a special thing to go. There's something, a little bit of mystique there. It's romanticized. Flagstaff is a beautiful town. Great weather in the mountains, and it gets with the players kind of to live in that college life is having to stay in the dorms. There's not many places to go, so you get to see them out in public more as they go out at night, so you can run into them a little bit. However, I think it's better. I think it's better to have it here. It's better for the fans overall. It's better for more. There's more positives for more fans. And aside from the kind of the fairy tale of Flagstaff, and heavens, I love going to Flagstaff. It's some really cool things. I went with my best friend 3 years ago. 2 years ago, I went with my boys for a full week. It was great. And then last year I was doing more of them in about the working media portion of that. It's always something very different because the atmosphere is much lighter. And I don't know how that atmosphere is going to be in Glendale this year. But more fans are going to be able to go more often. The facilities are better. People don't have to travel. When you're talking about the media side of things, it's less work, and it does for us not so much, but for a lot of the local media, it's less of an issue of getting people out there. I like, in fact, when I was at FanFest, as several of the fans there, and the community on Revenge of the Birds, again, we're revengeofthebirds.com. We are producing this Arizona Cardinals Revenge of the Birds podcast. Visit us at revengeofthebirds.com. At FanFest, I talked to several people, and I know generally the community on our website has been, oh, it's terrible. We need to go to Flagstaff. It's so much nicer. Every single person I talked to at the stadium there at FanFest had never taken the trip to Flagstaff. And when they were told about the fact that training camp would be down here, and they were excited, and said, definitely I'll make some, definitely I'll go to a practice or two. So people who had never been will get to have that experience. Building a fan base, you need that. And even though if they're 25 years, we still don't have a strong fan base. And while you have a faithful few that go up to Flagstaff and have that special kind of feeling, we're going to expand that. It may not be quite as special, but it's going to be good. And so I like it. There are some downsides, though. The one thing that's going to be different is being at Flagstaff outside there to NAU, there was a little more fan-player contact. You had the walkthroughs in the morning, and then you had to practice in the afternoon. And when it comes for kids and fans getting autographs, it was real easy. This year, the morning walkthroughs aren't open, so there won't be that opportunity for fans to communicate with the players to get autographs. And in the evening, the practice will be open. How that autograph portion will take place, I'm sure it'll be very similar. They'll probably go to the sidelines, go to the stands, and sign for the fans there. But you're going to lose a few more player contact moments. Anything that you're looking forward to in particular, other than the fact that you get to go to practice or two this year?
You know, not really. I'm, like I said, glad I don't have to make a drive. I just hope that, you know, we don't hear any excuses of, oh, well, you know, they didn't train up in Flagstaff this year, so, you know, that's why this season went south if something happens again. So, but overall, you know, I like the move. I'm kind of with you on that. I think it's going to open up the door for fans more. I think, you know, there's a niche base that have spent a lot of time going to Flagstaff over the last 25 years, but like you said, this fan base for 25 years isn't as large as you would like it to be. So maybe this is a small move in that direction that can kind of bump that up and make it more of a fan-friendly type of place.
All right. So we talked about the off-season move. We talked about training camp. There's something I kind of want to talk about previously. You've been writing a lot about the defense, 3-4, 4-3, the defensive schemes, what we're going to see. Do you think that we're going to see a 4-3 defense? Or are we going to see it at all this year? Bruce Arians said we're going to be hybrid. We're going to be an attacking defense. He wouldn't pencil it in. He did refuse to be pigeonholed into a scheme. Todd Bowles, however, said we're going to be a 3-4 base. Do you think we're going to see? You've written a few things there on RevengeOfTheRoar.com. You've written a couple of pieces about the defensive lines, the roles that the defensive linemen play. We looked at the personnel, how it seems to be where they've got players that are more suited for 4-3. And you yourself have said you would like to see a 4-3 the more you think about it. Do you think we're going to see that at all this year?
You know, just based off of, and this is complete speculation on my part, but just based off of what Matt Williamson from ESPN, you know, he's one of the unknown insiders, so, you know, he's not a John Clayton or one of those guys, but he's continually tweeted that, you know, we're going to see more 4-3 from Arizona this year. And then, you know, as I put on my last article, Darnell Dockett continuing with his I'm not a 3-4 lineman hashtag. You know, you're the one that, you know, you've been to the mini camps and things like that, and you've stated, you know, you see all, it's 3-4. That's what the base is. You know, we'll see a lot of probably a 3-3-5 or maybe even a 4-2-5 this year. Maybe we'll even see the 2-5 or 2-4-5 again. But the personnel is just so mishmash to me. Like I've said before, you got a guy in Darnell Dockett who you pay a lot of money to for a defensive tackle in the NFL who doesn't put up numbers worthy of what he's being paid. And that's not to say he's not worth it or anything like that, but he has been schemed to not hit to – you know, he's been schemed where it's not fitting his strength, and then he's not meeting the expectations of what his paycheck is. And then, you know, now you've just paid Calais Campbell, you paid Darrell Washington, and those guys really do fit the base 3-4-2 gap scheme a lot better. You know, that old Pittsburgh scheme that lets the middle linebackers or the inside linebackers in the 3-4 make, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tackles. That's what that's about. And, you know, you've got a good nose tackle in Dan Williams who, you know, like I wrote the other day per profootballfocus.com, he, you know, he's one of the top six defensive tackles in the NFL and in the against the run last year. Excuse me. And, you know, and if you're talking about moving him to a one-gap scheme, I'm not a fan of that. Then you have, you know, like I said, Darnell Dockett, who you put in a one-gap scheme, and all of a sudden you could see, you know, 2007 Darnell Dockett, the guy that had 9 sacks on the season and was creating havoc nonstop in the backfield and, you know, earned that massive contract that he was paid. And so it's a real conundrum. My biggest thing with the 3-4 versus the 4-3 is either way you look at it, you don't have a pass rusher on this roster from the outside, whether it be just a straight defensive end in a 4-3 or in the 3-4. You don't have a prototypical outside linebacker that can just get after the quarterback. And that, to me, is worrisome. You know, the reason I kind of like the 4-3 under over, you know, offset schemes a little more is because it will get the three talented linebackers and mentor Dansby and Washington on the field at the same time. And then you can still utilize Campbell in his, you know, defensive end, hold down the two gaps on the strong side, and you can put Darnell in an attacking go get into the backfield set. And I think that would, in the scheme of things, work better. Like I said in the article the other day, if you're going to run a base 3-4 with the talent they have, I think you run your two-gap scheme and you have Matt Shaughnessy and Calais Campbell as your defensive ends and Dan Williams as your nose tackle, and that leaves Darnell Dockett out. I understand that. You don't want to pay that much money to a guy sitting on the bench. So, you know, you're going to adapt the defense to try to get him more involved. And I think, you know, whether it be 4-3 or 3-4, that's what their initial goal is going to be going into the season, is getting Darnell engaged again.
Now, personnel-wise, I'm going to defer to you when it comes to the quality of who fits what scheme better. That's kind of your forte. I don't know what to think about what Darnell Dockett is saying at all, because like I've mentioned, everything I've seen and everything I've heard, aside from Matt Williamson, is just screams at me where they're still going to run a 3-4. Todd Bowles, back when he went back in 2010, when Ken Wisenhunt was looking for a defensive coordinator, then when they eventually hired Ray Horton, Todd Bowles is one of those finalists, one of Wisenhunt's requirements. He wanted a 3-4 defense. He likes the 3-4 scheme. That was Bowles then. Bowles is the one that said, we're running a 3-4, after Arian said, well, we're going to be an attacking defense. Then if we look at scheme-wise, so Darnell Dockett's comments are kind of like, no, I'm not a 3-4 end. But yet everything I've seen in practice, they're doing three down linemen in base packages. I haven't seen anything with the four down. I've seen their nickel is by personnel, because they list Shaughnessy as an outside linebacker. So personnel-wise, it shows the two-man. So they got Calais and they've got Dockett. But Shaughnessy, he lines up with his hand on the ground. So he's basically lined as the D end there. And Dockett right up the middle. And so they're running basically a three-man front there on nickel packages. But then at the same time, you look at when they – going into the draft, Alex Okafor. He's drafted. Yeah, he played defensive end in college, but one of the things that they talked about, and he said in some interviews, he said that the team asked him about whether or not he can play in coverage, play on the edge as a 3-4 linebacker, outside linebacker, and that's one of the questions that they had. So for me, now granted, maybe their personnel is kind of flexible both ways. Maybe that's something Arians wants to move towards in a year or two. I personally just don't see them running maybe a few looks here or there, but it seems to me that they're everything that they're doing is still geared towards that 3-4 scheme, and they're just finding different ways to get Darnell Dockett engaged. For example, on passing downs in nickel, which they're probably going to run 40 to 50% of the time anyway, they're going to have him lined up as a tackle.
Yeah, and you want to put him in a position where he's going against, you know, smaller interior offensive linemen who may be able to match his quickness, but his quickness combined with his, you know, strength and his upper body strength, he's able to win a lot of those one-on-one battles. And, you know, getting him into gaps and allowing him to tack, you know, that's always been what he's best at. And, you know, the thing that was the conundrum to me outside of Dockett just being Dockett and talking and none of us really understanding what he's talking about was the Minter and Dansby combination with Brinkley as well. All three of those guys in a 3-4 are inside linebackers. None of those guys, at least to me, you want to line up as an outside linebacker, you know, pin your ears back, go, you know, get after the quarterback. Maybe you can put Dansby or Washington out there at times, maybe. But, I mean, you look at what Darrell Washington did last year and just how great of a season he really had, and you're saying, okay, well, let's change what you're doing in the 3-4 defense, and do you really, I mean, me just being me, I don't want to do that. I don't want to change a strength and make it a question mark. Not even, you know, a bad thing, just you don't know for sure. And then you look at, you know, like I said, Minter. Minter is the ideal fit next to Washington in that two-gapping 3-4 scheme. That's a great draft pick. And you had a guy like Jasper Brinkley that you brought in, a good fit in that downhill, stop-the-run type thing. And he could hold down the fort until, you know, Minter was ready or until Washington got back or whatever needed to be done. And then you had Dansby. And maybe I'm just reading too much into it, and that's their idea. We're going to put Brinkley and Dansby as the one inside, and then when Washington gets back, he'll take over for whoever is playing worse. And then whenever Minter passes one of the other ones on the depth chart, that's what they'll do, and they'll just have a very deep inside linebacker rotation. But if you're asking me to put a label on the three best linebackers they have, you're going to talk about Kevin Minter, Darrell Washington, and Carlos Dansby. And I want those three guys on the field, you know, 40, 50% of the time in a base defense. And I don't see a way to get them on the field and put them in a position to make plays if you're running a 3-4. And I guess that's just my looking at the game from an analytical aspect and looking at what these players can do and having watched Minter play in that 4-3 in LSU and just watching him make plays all over the field, going downhill and things like that. And I just, you know, and it's all speculation at this point. You know, you're going off of what you've seen, and I'm not saying you're speculating. I'm speculating here. But you're going off of what you've seen and what you've been told and what you've talked to the coaches about. And I'm just going off the personnel that you brought in. That doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, like I said, I'm just talking about it, and we'll see what happens, obviously.
Well, one of the most interesting things that I've seen, it was kind of my impression and yours too, and kind of anyone who's kind of pays attention to football at all, when they signed Jasper Brinkley, you thought, okay, they brought in a two-down linebacker. Because statistically, when you look at his play in coverage, he just didn't look good last year dropping back into coverage. But what has been interesting is he runs with the first team nickel package. The linebackers that are out there, it's Dansby and Brinkley and Acho. They don't bring in – now, I think if I'm thinking about it, with Darrell Washington sitting out, they wanted a similar type player. And I think Carlos Dansby, that came up later on. And they sat down after his arrest and think, you know, we might not get him back after the first four games. It might be longer. And so they addressed that issue separately to what they did draft-wise. They already locked up Washington long-term. They signed Brinkley. They drafted Minter. And so you've got those three linebackers that you figure are going to be kind of the core there. But then you have bringing Dansby into the mix. And I can totally see what once Washington comes back, I don't know how that playing time is going to look, but I can totally see, because Dansby knows how to play both those inside positions. Instead of Brinkley, which when I saw him running out there with the nickels, and I was like, in the first day in OTAs and in minicamps, I'm like, oh, that's interesting, considering pretty much everyone's been saying that that is not his strong suit. You're going to see Dansby and Washington and nickel packages together. And it'll be Dansby, Washington, and Ocho.
Yeah, and I think, like you just hit on, that what the reason they're doing that right now is just specifically because we're going to give the guy reps that's going to be there on game one. You know, we know how good Darrell Washington is. We see what he can do. He's just got to, you know, stay on the field, basically. And to me, you can't give reps to a guy that's not going to be there game one through four. You want to give those reps to whoever the best player is. And, you know, no matter what anybody said about Wiz, he was as hard-headed as he was, or, you know, how he hated playing rookies and things like that. You know, other than Jonathan Cooper, who is probably the best lineman they have on the team now after being drafted, you know, you're not going to hand Kevin Minter the starting job, especially with established veterans like Brinkley and Dansby in front of him. So that, I can see why they're doing it. I mean, Dansby is not the athlete he was when he left here. I don't know how many fans, you know, kept up with his career and his play. So he's not the athlete he was, but he's still a good enough athlete to be on the field three downs and be an effective linebacker. But, you know, for now, I think you're going to see early, at least, you know, Brinkley and Dansby in the middle. And then, like you said, maybe the conundrum begins when Washington gets back and Minter's, you know, kicking down the door to get playing time. So it's really a good problem to have. When you think about it, the only bad thing, I guess, for me is that you still, if you're running that 3-4, like I said earlier, you still don't have a guy that I look at and say, wow, that's our pass rusher. That's who on third down and long is going to pin his ears back and be able to beat anybody one-on-one. And, you know, that's something in a 3-4 defense, unless you have J.J. Watt, and as good as Calais Campbell is, he's never had a season like J.J. Watt had last year. You can't, you know, you can't really say that you have that. So, well, you know, like I said, it's conjecture for me right now. You're the one that's seen them play, and you've seen how they're running their personnel out there. So, you know, I'll bow to you on the on what they're actually doing while I hypothesize on what they should be doing.
Hey, that sounds good. Well, thanks everybody for listening tonight to the first episode of Revenge of the Birds on our Arizona Cardinals podcast. We will be back again the week of training camp, and we will preview much of what we're going to do. We'll have Seth back. We might have another one of our writers on as well, and we'll talk about the key positional battles, players that we hope to step up, players that we think are going to take a step back. We'll be doing all things training camp coming up in a couple of weeks. But for now, we'd like to close thank you guys for listening. And this has been Revenge of the Birds, the first episode.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.